Welcome to, I believe, episode four of this season's 2-Point Conversion. Like, I think the guys that talk on it, like, they kept a running total, like, from the beginning. I can't do that. Those are numbers way too high. And they told me there wouldn't be maps. So, this is episode four for this season. And we'll just, like, do it that way. I am one of your co-hosts, and you can find me on Twitter at Gladys L. Tyler. And then, of course, the other co-host. Hi, Jay.
Hello.
How
What's
are
up,
you?
everybody? How's everybody doing out there?
Out there in internet land.
Internet land.
So two things. One, if you're watching on Twitter and you're making comments, we can't see them because for some reason, thanks Elon Musk, but actually it was way before him. We don't get the Twitter feed, so you'll have to switch over to like Facebook or Twitch or YouTube. And if you're on YouTube, then you need to like smash that like button because, hey, bam,
Got to get the algorithm going.
got to get the algorithm going. That's right. And then for the second, like, house cleaning thing, we, Underdog Fantasy, I put it up there, so that you would know that if you scan the QR code or if you just go on Underdog Fantasy, you can play, get $100 matching. The promo code is GF2. And you can play just about any sport there. And to anyone's listening, I have a question. What is a golf influencer, this Paige chick whose birthday was today? Does she play golf or does she just walk around in skimpy outfits with a golf club? If anyone knows the answer to that, hello, Jamie, then I really want to know. I mean, I'm really seriously asking because I have no idea what a golf influencer is if it isn't someone who doesn't play golf. And if
She's an
she's
instructor, right?
I don't think she's an
Is
instructor
that?
either. I the only thing I've seen her do is walk around in very, yeah, Paige Spernick. Thank you. That's
Yes,
is she.
Spearnik.
So what, bam, what is she? Tell me. Does she play golf? Does she teach golf? Or does she just like influence people with her very hot body and
Hot body. That's subjective.
Have you seen her?
I
You don't
have.
think, dude, she's like busting out everywhere. I mean, objectively speaking, aesthetically, it's a hot body. Like, I don't do girls, but it's a hot body. Like, I would be okay with that body on my under my head. It's a lot going on there. She has a lot going on there. But yeah, so bam, what does she do? Does she teach golf? What makes her a golf influencer? Oh, there's like craziness happening right there. I like it. All right, so let's get started because we have a few things to cover that I think she used to be a golf pro, but now her body is better than her game. Okay, I can buy that because it would be hard to have it not be better than that because it's pretty slamming. But
So she's
let's.
the so she's the Anna Kornikova
No,
of
Anna.
golf
No,
now.
no, 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 no. Anna Kornikova played. Anna Kornikova played. Like she
she
legitimately
never
played.
but did she win?
I think she didn't win a major, but I think she won like the other tournaments. Like there are tournaments other than majors. I think Kornikova won like a couple of the like the Miami Slam or whatever they call it now. And like, what's the follow-up? The one right before the U.S. Open that is in Florida. I think she won that one too. So yeah, I'm gonna have to because I know who Anna Kournikova is. I just didn't know this Paige Spornik is. She just for some reason popped up on my feed for her 30th birthday.
Well,
Yay!
happy birthday, Paige.
Happy birthday, Paige. 30.
Yeah, we're both we'll drink to that.
Yeah, coffee. You can tell, I don't drink much. Coffee and Bailey's is the choice for today because it's snowing in March here in Denver, just so you guys would know that. It's ridiculous. All right, anyway, moving on with our topics for today. We are going to talk, let's talk first, let's talk about the Final Four. All right. I personally, even though my bracket was busted like the first week, I enjoyed it. It was my bracket was done like after the first round. But I enjoy this chaos. I really do. I mean, it's fun to watch. I just read some guy won $26,000 betting on the last four games. because he picked FAU and then the rest of the three, and he bet 25 and he won 26,000. So I like
goodness.
I know, nice right? parlay. That is a great parlay. I could never do that. But so I know, Jay, you said kudos to you, UConn, and I poo-pawed it because of the Hurley guy. So I'm an idiot. It's okay. I'll take my lumps.
I believe that UConn was underseeded from the beginning. They were not a four seed. I believe that UConn was probably the fifth best team in the country. So they should have been at least on the two line, but it didn't matter. I liked the tournament, but I think it's anticlimactic now because of the Final Four. Yeah, it's the Final Four because nobody wants to see UConn versus San Diego State in the final. Here's the thing about March Madness, right? Everybody wants the close. You don't want Cinderella there. You want Cinderella to give the blue chips a good scare. You want the almost to happen, right? You want them to, you know, push them to the brink and then prevail. But at the end of the day, I hate it as you much as you would like to see Duke versus Kansas or something like that in the final. At least that's kind of how.
I strenuously disagree with that.
Okay.
First of all, Jamie, I want my $10 back if that's in fact what the pay-in was. I forgot what it was, but whatever it was, I should really get my money back on that going for two bracket that I really.
I didn't even play this year. I forgot all about it.
How did you forget about it? How is that possible? That's all anyone talked about for like a week. But okay.
It's because I'm adulting, right? My job is like
adulting. Yeah, that's true.
It's so demanding.
I try to avoid adulting at all costs. so I want the underdogs to be in the final. I want to see FAU win. Although I'm not really crazy about their coach, but I want to see FAU win. And I would like to see UConn not win because I consider them one of the blue bloods. Like they had that streak where they were really, really good. And then they switched coaches out for a bit and they weren't that great. But I would like to see someone who's never won win. I mean, I think that's exciting. I like chaos. I am a fan of chaos.
I think you're going to see it. I think that the national champion is going to be San Diego State.
Really?
So, yeah.
Wait, who are they playing?
They're playing Florida Atlantic in the regional, and then they'll get the winner of UConn Miami.
Who you are saying is going to be UConn?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think San Diego State's they're one of those teams of you know, when you get kind of the breaks that kind of went their way. Well coached, good pedigree, got good guard play, big strong team. They rebound well. They play defense. San Diego State's just a good. They're a good tournament team, right? They're going to give you a tough out, you know, every time out. You're going to fight for every possession. And I just think that it kind of really just bodes well. I think that San Diego State's been one of those teams. San Diego State to me is like how Gonzaga was like 10 years ago, right? Where they were just kind of building this good program. And everybody respected them as being an up-and-coming program, but they didn't really break the ceiling of being elite until recently. And I think that that's kind of what we're seeing now with San Diego State, where they're going to break the seal and they're going to start being one of the elite teams. They're going to be in the top 10 pretty much moving forward. They just got a good program going there.
Okay, I just want to say that I'm hoping Miami wins. If FAU can't win, I'm hoping Miami wins. Because, one, I like their old coach. I think he's kind of cool. And, two, that Texas game, that comeback, I mean, a lot of it was on Texas because they were just out of control there for a while. Which brings me to another point before I forget. Kansas State.
Yeah, we got to talk about that.
I mean, I understand that the guard, what's his name? The little guard from New York. I understand that he's really good.
Marquise Noel.
Noel. But, yep. Oh, my God. He did not acknowledge anybody else on that team the last 5 minutes. Like, he tried to take that game into his own hands. And I know it's not popular to say, and I know it's a team sport, but I think he kind of cost that team that game.
See, I think that he needed 3 more points. I've so All right, can we talk about that game?
Yes,
the Florida Atlantic, what was it? Florida Atlantic and K-State. So I think that Florida Atlantic is probably one of the luckiest teams that I've ever seen, right? They got lucky in the first round against Memphis. They got lucky in the last game, Kansas State. So Kansas State showed you why they were just so frustrating all year, right? They're the team that can go out. They beat Kansas. They beat Texas. They beat TCU. They beat Baylor twice. But they're also the same team that lost to Oklahoma, and nobody lost to Oklahoma this year. I mean, FAU, they out-rebounded them, right? They out-rebounded them 44-22. Okay. 14 offensive rebounds resulting in 15 second chance points, okay? And Florida Atlantic shot 81.8% from the free throw line. Okay. K-State was only 66.5% from the line. All that said, they needed Kansas State basically to go on a six-minute drought late in the second half to not even score a point. Noel scores a point, right? They go up 63-57. They couldn't score, right? He hits the big three, like from the logo. They went six minutes in a championship game without scoring a single point. Then, for things that are beyond me, okay, with the game on the line, you're down by three. They get a high pick. They call a high pick for Noel. Okay, he comes out. The guy slips, his defender slips, and then they get the switch on the big guy, Golden, from Florida Atlantic, and he creates about 7 feet of space, and he didn't take the pullback. The wide-open three-pointer, he dumps it down inside, and they go, and now they try to extend the game. Well, you can extend the game when a team is missing free throws, but I just gave you the line. Florida Atlantic was shooting 80% from the free throw line. I just think that Noel passed up a chance to basically – you know, win the game there. Then on the mad scramble, you got to get a shot off. I don't care if Noel himself has to shoot a half court shot, which should have happened at that point in time. That was going to be the best shot that he was going to get. And it was one of the situations where his worst shot was better than anybody else's good shot at that point, because the kid was just simply sensational at that point in time. But Kansas State, I've watched them play a couple of times this year, and if I had hair, I'd be pulling it out if I was a fan of Kansas State, because they're just so up and down, so inconsistent, and it finally caught up to them.
Okay, I agree with you on maybe two points. One, that last shot, he should have taken that shot instead of dumping it off. I agree. That's the only time I think that him going mad by himself was okay. There were like five times he came up and he tried to drive, and he had guys open on the outside that he didn't even look at them. He didn't even try to get the ball to them. That's when they had that long drought. Like, it was like he panicked and he felt that he was the only one that was going to be able to get them out of the dumpster fire that they had put themselves into. And it was so frustrating for me, because clearly Kansas State on any given night is the better team, right? And that's the best thing about the NCAA. It only takes one.
That's what's perfect about the NCAA bracket, right? That's what we watch it for, right? On any given night, you can have Florida Atlantic in the Final Four. I do think that this is the new normal, though. I do think this is the new normal with the NCAA. So you're starting to see, first off, the mid-majors have always fared well in the tournament. But now you're really about to see that now, where you're going to see more people, more athletes going, moving parts in the transfer portal due to the NIL. And so you're going to start to see some of these teams that are able to build cohesiveness over years, you know, really start to perform well over more teams that are going to be more one and dones. We used to have like Kentucky, Duke, those would be your one and dones. Well, now you're getting one and dones pretty much everywhere. And unless you have exceptional coaching, which most teams don't have, they're going to be very vulnerable to these kind of teams right here that have been playing for 4 years. Some of them, you know, coming close to their 30s, you know, been playing for that long. But yeah, I do think that this is going to be the new normal, where it used to be unthinkable that a 16 seed can beat a 1 seed. And now you've had a 16 seed knock out a one, twice in 3 years?
Yeah. So who do you think is the better coach out of the four teams in the final?
Hurley.
You think he's a better coach than the Miami coach?
Yeah. I don't like the Miami coach.
Why don't you like the Miami coach?
I don't like Miami. I didn't like that team. I'm surprised that they made it this far.
Really? Okay.
Remember, I told you that. I was like, they're not a good
team. Yeah, but I thought you thought they weren't a good team because that big guy got hurt and there was they weren't
sure who was gonna play. I thought that they were the best team in a bad conference, right? I thought that the ACC was a bad conference this year. I thought that they were just the team that happened to win. I would probably say that what's his name? Deutscher? The San Diego State coach?
Oh, yeah, I'm not.
Brian Deutscher, is that his name?
Sounds good.
I think that's his name.
That's what we'll go.
Brian with. D. Some weird. I know it starts with a D. I may be mangling his name, but okay. So he's a good coach, right? He was under Steve Fisher for a long time, like 20 plus years or something like that. And so he basically got a program that because he worked with them in Michigan. He got a program that came over into San Diego State, kind of inherited over into him. He's recruiting the same type of players. That Fisher would. So I do think that he's a good coach. I think he's up and coming, but I think that maybe, yeah, if I would take it back. I would say that he's the best coach left out of the Final Four.
Better than Hurley? You're giving up on your boy?
Yeah, I'm going to give up on Hurley.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I think Hurley has better players.
Seismic shift in the universe just now. I felt it. I felt it happen. Yeah, like I said, I'm okay with what happened. You know, like I played in what 4 brackets and yeah. And I had, I think Bama in 3 of them in Texas in 1.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Bama game. I'm glad they lost. I'm not going to.
Yeah. Lose. You called it. You said that Brandon Miller, that's a lot. That's too much pressure coming in.
19-year-old. Yeah.
Yeah. You're 18. You can't. Basketball can't be the great escape for such a major, major situation. And then when it becomes a high-pressure situation as a one-and-done tournament like March Madness, all it takes is one bad game and you're done. And that's what happened. I mean, what did he have, 11 points in that game? And he was pretty much – there was a point in time where I was like, is he even playing? Because I just didn't see, like, anything going on for him. And then, you know, he does, like, some stupid foul, and I was like, oh, he is still on the floor. So I think that he finally, you know, finally hit that he was a freshman and it just came at an unfortunate time for Bama.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like one karma. Mishap and it's a bitch and it happened. And I'm glad because can you imagine, like, if it didn't, that's all we would be talking about. That's all people would be talking about is, and I don't know. I'm just glad the 4 teams that are in, with the exception of Texas not being there, because I really, really, really wanted Texas. I wanted the interim Texas coach to make it to the Final Four. I actually wanted him to win the Final Four. I think that would have been a great story. As it is, now my great story is either Miami or Florida Atlantic. Those are the two I want to be in. But like I said, I like chaos. So I will take any of them.
Florida Atlantic. There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
you had a live dog.
But but like you said, they are extremely lucky. I mean, the Kansas State would go that long without a shot, without goal, that long without scoring is kind of a ridiculous, like, proposition. Like, you wouldn't have bet on that.
And just the lack of court awareness and lack of game situational awareness. So even, you know, Noel, like, you got to know, why are you going to pass up a wide open 3 when you're down by 3 with 16 seconds left and 14 seconds left in the game? You got the shot. You came off of the pick. The guy slipped. You did a step back. You've been making that shot all night, and now that they need you to shoot it, you don't.
Yeah.
So I think that was just one of those things. And it's one of those things where you can say, oh, he's a young player, but you realize he's a senior. So, yeah.
Yeah.
That was disappointing. That was a disappointing end to that game. San Diego State was that was a weird ending too.
Yeah, both of the games were kind of – but they were good games up until like the last minute. And then you're like, the San Diego State, the foul called. I was like, I mean, don't get me wrong. I didn't want Creighton to win, but I didn't want them to lose like that. You know, I didn't want them to lose because of a call that was at best like the Super Bowl call. Like, you could not call that and everyone would be okay. You know, just let that go.
I don't have a problem with calling the foul per se. I have a problem with the precedent that was set for the entire game, right? So I used to ref. And just like teams would scout each other, right? They know each other. They know tendencies, weaknesses, strengths, and things like that, what they want to do. The refs would scout games as well, right? And so they kind of look at it and they see how these teams want to play. They made up their mind that they were going to allow both Creighton and San Diego State to be physical, blue-collar, gritty teams, which is how they got to where they are, okay? And they set that precedent from the very beginning of the game. There was a total of, 20 fouls called the entire game, right? So they went to the first half, brutal first half, very physical. You come back out. You didn't make the adjustments there, and you carried on with what you had already established. So for me, it's the right call. It's a foul. His hand was on his hip. He pushed him. He altered the shot. But at the same time, you hadn't called that all game, and now you decide you want to play your whistle. Where some people will say, well, if you call that game, you're deciding the game. I think that if you don't call it where it's obvious, you're also deciding the game as well. But you went against the character that you have established for how that game was going to be played, and calling a foul basically that you hadn't called for 39 minutes and 58 seconds.
Right.
Which made that, and you're right, right? It's one of those things where he's going to miss the shot. He was already, momentum was already taking him to the left anyway. He was going to kind of have to come across his body to get the shot off. Anyway, he was going to miss it. They were going to go in overtime. You give both teams 5 minutes and duke it out again, and then made a best player win. Yeah, I just thought that it was unfortunate that the refs became the talking point of what was otherwise probably the best Elite Eight game. Yeah.
Did we talk about the foul? Did we talk about the one in the Super Bowl?
We did. Okay. We talked about that. We talked about how even if it's the right call, there's a right circumstance and a situation to make the right call. And it's based off of what you're doing. Now, if the refs were calling that foul all game long, then we wouldn't have a complaint, right? Because you'd be saying, right, you know, it's consistent. And I think that that's what the general public will say when you see something like that, that it was inconsistent. It was out of character to how the refs allowed that game to be played for the whole game.
So you said you used to referee, right?
Yeah.
Why would you call that all of a sudden? Do you panic? Are the refs panicking too, thinking, like, when the incident happens, you think, do I call this or do I not? Or do you just panic and go, that's a foul, I'm calling it, regardless of what
depends.
I
do? It depends on where you're at in the game, right? If you're conscious of the situation, if you're conscious of, you know, what's happening in the game and the magnitude of it, then I probably, in that situation, I wouldn't have called it. Because okay. I'm already saying, like, okay, what is this shot? It's an off balance. If he makes it, he makes it. It's an off balance shot. Okay. Both teams have fought their hearts out. We haven't called these fouls all game long. I'm going to let this game go in overtime and let them, you know, figure it out on their own. And then if you want to do it, so then what ends up happening is sometimes the refs will make a gear change. They'll do it in overtime where it might be a little too late then as well. You don't do it there either. Right. If you want to make a gear change and say, you know what, we need to start calling a little bit tighter. It kind of happens more in the beginning of the second half. And you do it. You kind of do it when the team start making subs. Right. When they start subbing in players, those are the guys that you use to make the example of where you say, you know, we're going to tighten this game up a little bit. We're going to start pinning some fouls on some of these subs. And then the coaches kind of adjust to it so that you're not really hurting the stars or that. But you also change the tone of the game. You let them know, hey, look, we're going to play it a little cleaner. And the rest of the way. So watch your hand checks, watch your fouls, watch, you know, your reaching and all of that type of stuff. So I wouldn't have called it, but I can't fault any ref who actually did make the call because he did foul him.
Yeah. Okay. I can live with that explanation from an ex-ref. I can take that. I'll be okay with it. And again, I didn't want Creighton to win, so it doesn't really I'm not as upset as if I were a Creighton fan.
Creighton is like they're like a poor man's Duke, huh?
Yeah, they are. They really, really are. And you called the Duke too. Man, you were on fire. You were on fire. You called the Duke, you called the UConn.
I called Purdue as well.
Everyone called Purdue.
Okay, nobody can take credit for that one. Everybody knew Purdue was weak.
I think everyone knew their coach wasn't. He's not a tournament coach. Like, he doesn't make those in-game. He doesn't make those in-game changes that help them win. So, yeah, everyone called Purdue. But, yeah, much props to you for the UConn and the Duke call. And, Jamie, much props to you for winning the going to bracket. Who do you have, Jamie, in the Final Four? You have to – there's – I think I saw something that said, like, 1.7% of, like, million brackets had –
she probably just has just one – just all you need is one survivor at this point, right?
Probably.
I think ESPN said out of the 2 million, only 36 of them have this Final Four.
Wait, someone has a Final Four like that?
Well, you know, you always going to get homers, right? They're going to be like, yeah, Florida Atlantic's the best team, you know what I mean? So out of the – I'm pretty sure all 37 people that have Florida Atlantic in the Final Four go to Florida Atlantic.
Yeah, I could see that. Or are Florida – can players, like, do the brackets?
I don't think Florida, they can.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
I think that might be a little too close to
– Take that away. Wait, he had Texas and Alabama.
Yeah, but they said that the whole league is out of teams. So that's typically what happens, right? When you get a bracket with a lot of people that don't really watch it, they'll go by familiar names and they'll play pretty chalky lineups. Right. But I thought that all four of the one seeds were a little bit shaky. I didn't really believe in Houston. I thought Alabama was strong. I never believe in Kansas. I never believe in Purdue. So it's one of those things, right? It would have been a tough season to really pick a favorite. If there's any time to guess in a bracket, it would have been this year.
Yeah, and Jamie, Cleveland Jamie did it. Way to go, Jamie. Props to you. All right, we're going to pivot a little bit, a lot actually, to a different sport. Let's talk a little bit about Lamar Jackson, who came out on a tweet today and said that March 2nd, he requested a trade. So March 2nd, he requested a trade. March 7th, they franchised him. So they were like, yeah, that's not going to happen for you, buddy. Or, you know. And then I guess I don't know why it took him this long to say, hey, I requested a trade on March 2nd, unless maybe he's talking to someone. But why wait this long to let people know that you requested a trade?
I think Lamar Jackson is a little bit naive. Oh. I love the guy. I think that he's a little bit naive in the game of representing himself. He doesn't have access to, you know, some of the people that an agent would have. And I think that he basically played very well into the hands of the Ravens with the situation. And I think that announcing it now, coming out, hey, I did this back in March. Well, now it's a good time to do it, right? You got the draft coming up. You got the situation with the Jets and Aaron Rodgers kind of hitting a little bit of a snag here. And so if you're going to throw the Hail Mary, you know, and want to get traded out of there, then you would do it right before the draft. But I think that the NFL teams have already colluded against Lamar so that it's a moot point.
Well, all right. So I agree. I'm glad in a way, like the players that are starting to represent themselves, like what Ndamukong Suh does it, Richard Sherman did it, Lamar's doing it. I understand, you know, you want to have more power into your life. You want to have more say over what you're doing. What I don't think that they count on is how personal it gets. Like, that's why you have the agent. So it doesn't become personal. Because like everyone keeps saying over and over again, it's a business. It's a business. They don't care about you. Ask Ezekiel Elliott. They don't care who you are. It's a business. And I think when a player represents himself, he's looking at it like, I have done all this for you, or I am so much better than person X and you're not paying me what I'm worth. That kind of takes, for me, the business element out of it and starts making it personal. And once it gets personal, then you no longer are looking at it like they are, and they automatically have the upper hand because they're looking at it like a business, which is what it is. So
correct.
I think that
Baltimore played the business very well.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they hit them with the exclusive tag. They basically allowed all the other teams to set the market for them, knowing the pulse is that all the other teams want to kind of pull back on the salaries of quarterbacks anyway, unless you're the prototypical, you know, Joe Burrow type guys where they're going to go ahead and they're going to break the bank for you. Lamar Jackson's coming off of a couple of injuries. Baltimore knew that, and they knew that they know that his value is higher, but it doesn't matter what his value is. It matters what people think the value is and what the collective think is, and that is that Lamar Jackson should have taken $252 million from the Ravens, and he shouldn't get more than that.
Right. And I understand what Bam is saying. It is their lives. It is their career. But once something becomes personal, it's no longer business. You don't look at it like a business. And that is exactly what the owners are doing. They're looking at it like a business. And once you get a bunch of owners who collude, although they're in, you know, you're not supposed to do that, you've lost the leverage that you would have had you started from the beginning looking at it like, okay, this is how they are going to react, because they don't want Deshaun Watson's contract to be the standard. Although, yeah. I'm sorry, with Joe Burrow and Jalen Hurts coming up, I mean,
yeah,
they have to make, like, Lamar, unfortunately, is the line in the sand, so to speak. Like, especially with the two younger ones coming up behind him that are going to need a contract, Burrow and Hurts. So if they can draw a line in the sand with Lamar, they've established.
Yeah, you're exactly right. The league is establishing a reset right here where they're saying, well, we have an MVP that we're not even paying, you know, this right here. We need to pull some of these salaries back. At the end of the day, Bam, you do have a point, right? It is, you know, they need to make it more personal with their lives and their careers. But to Gladys's point, the minute that emotion comes into play there, it's not going to be the same effect in the negotiations part, where the whole tweet that came from Lamar just came from some, you know, the girlfriend that, you know, just found out that her boyfriend was, you know, cheating on her type deal. It was very emotional. It was very, I requested a trade back here. You know, he writes this letter, this goodbye letter. You know what I mean? It was just super emotional.
Yeah.
And Lamar Jackson, literally, he lost his negotiation last year when he got hurt. He bet on himself that he was going to be able to finish the season, that he was going to have an MVP year, and he ended up getting hurt. And that's what happened.
Yeah, that is true. But for that injury, he probably could have written his own contract and written his own thing. But that's just one more thing that the league can say, you know, hey, or the teams negotiating with them can say, hey,
look what happened.
Look what happened.
Lost in the first round.
Exactly. And okay, so let's say Lamar, like, from a dynasty point of view, because I don't do dynasty, I do redraft. From a redraft point of view, the only team I can think that I would like him to go to is the Jets. And the Jets have already said that, although I don't really believe anything an owner or a coach says at this time, but they said that Lamar is out of the question because it would be bad faith, because they're in negotiations with Aaron Rodgers or something to that effect. Indianapolis has come up and said, hey, he's a special player. We will consider him. As far as redraft goes, I think that devalues Lamar Jackson so much to go to Indianapolis. And I don't even know why. I was trying to think of a reason that would be so, but I can't. I can't think of why I would hate him in Indianapolis, but I would not draft him high if he went to Indianapolis. Dynasty, like, I agree with Jamie, although, see, I don't, and this is, like, emotional, I don't want Desmond Ridder to lose his job because they get Lamar Jackson. Do you know what I mean? Like, Falcons would be an awesome place, especially since they have, like, the Michael Vick legacy going on there, and Lamar can slide right into that. But looking at it from Desmond Ridder's point of view, I think it would suck because he hasn't had a chance to prove that he could do it. But I don't know. As far as redraft, I'm not sure.
I like the Colts, though. I actually like Lamar for the Colts. You get a healthy Jonathan Taylor back, right? You know, they have an elite well, not an elite, they're very good, you know, young wide receiver that's ascending. I think that what happened with the Colts is the Colts got a little cute last year, and they kind of believed their own hype a little bit and got away from what allowed them to be good, right? And so you take who are the Colts, right? So you one of the things you talk about is how can he be good there with the Colts? Who's in the division? You know what I mean? That's going to be able to stop Lamar Jackson. And now you're talking about, you know, Lamar Jackson on a dome with Jonathan Taylor, where that RPO is just simply going to be deadly. It's not the ideal fit for him. I mean, obviously Atlanta, that's a pretty good, you know, situation there too, because you're taking kind of the same situation going into the NFC South. But I don't hate the Colts for Lamar Jackson.
Well, who do you think? Like, Sam says Lions, which that's the first I've ever heard anyone say the Lions.
If I were the Lions, I would give Jared Goff a legitimate chance next year. I think that they build a lot. I don't think that they necessarily want to start over again with Jared Goff. I mean, with someone else. I don't think that the Lions are in a position to where they're going to pay Lamar Jackson like that long term. But I don't hate Jared Goff for the Lions. I think that he is a capable enough quarterback for where their trajectory is and how they want to play football.
So who are you saying then?
I like the Colts.
Really?
I do.
And their offensive line, as Jamie aptly pointed out, doesn't bother you?
No, it doesn't bother me that much. Because I think that the Colts know where they need to get better, right? They know, okay, they need to get better at the offensive line. And I disagree that Goff is below average. I think that we've seen, you know, that's what we want to believe, right? We want to believe that. We want to say that Jared Goff is below average, but he's a good, capable NFL quarterback. Now, is he somebody who you're going to say, hey, I need you to go and win an NFC championship game? No. But you get him in a situation, he's surrounded by weapons. They have a good offensive line. They got a, you know, up and coming defense. I mean, I think that the Lions are a team that's growing together. And sometimes you don't need your quarterback being the best guy, like the be all end all. The Lions are kind of good to me, just from my perspective. I like the sum of parts, you know, that the Lions have with Goff being a part of that. And so I kind of like Goff.
Were you surprised that they let Jamal Williams go?
I was.
In free agency?
I was, but not really, right? It's one of those things where he kind of outplayed his contract a little bit there, yeah. Where the Lions were like, yeah, we're glad that you had a great year like that, but we can't pay for this season. I was shocked that he even went to – I was shocked that he went to the Saints. Right. On top of that, just – I mean, they're still an Alvin Kamara team. I don't think he's going to go. I don't think he's going to go into the same kind of situation there, unless you think Kamara is playing.
Yeah, that would be my thing. I don't know if Kamara has a season in him. If this trial or if this whatever doesn't go his way, he's going to be suspended for quite some time, which we thought was going to happen last year,
right. And so the general feeling was if it was going to happen, it would have happened already. But if that was his gamble, if that was the calculation in his gamble and it pays off, yeah, then he's going to have an all pro year.
Yeah. And then, yeah, I mean, I actually think, although I don't have that much confidence in the Saints coaching staff, I think they have enough parts there now that they'll be okay. They're going to be all right. With Jamal, with Derek Carr, with Chris Olave, yeah. Michael Thomas is coming back if he decides he wants to play ball. I don't know. I think they're going to be okay.
The draft capital on Lamar Jackson is expensive, right? So any team that's going to trade for Lamar Jackson, you're giving up two first-round draft picks. That's the price of negotiation. Coming into Lamar Jackson. So, yes, the Lions do have draft capital, but the Lions still have a few holes that they're still trying to fill. Is Lamar Jackson coming off of two season-ending injuries? You know, we know that the talent is there.
The question is not about Lamar Jackson's talent. The question is now what the NFL owners have painted is Lamar Jackson worth this premium amount of money with the injury risk that comes with him? Now, there's the one side of the coin to where I think where Bam is kind of getting to, where if you're the Lions, you're one of those teams that's going to be like, yeah, let's take the gamble and, you know, just shake them up and roll for it. Because if you hit on that, then the Lions are easily the best team in that division. And they'll be good for, you know, a few years there. But I just don't know if the Lions are kind of looking to go, you know, that way.
It's kind of much of an upgrade over Dalton. I think so. I think Carr is an upgrade over Dalton.
Yeah, I do. I agree.
So totally forgot what I was going to say after that. I think Lamar sits out this year. I actually don't think he's going to play. I don't think Indy has. I agree with, I think it's Jamie that's, or maybe it's Bam that said it, that the Colts are waiting to see who falls to them in the draft. Because
fair, very fair point.
My way, they're going to get either Bryce or CJ because Carolina's going to take Richardson, right? So if they get Bryce, if they can get without having to move and without having to get anything up, if they can get Bryce or CJ Stroud, the Lamar is non-existent to them. And they're the only ones who've actively come out and said, hey, yeah, you know, we're looking at him because he's a special player. That's the only team out of 32 teams. That's the only team that has said or expressed even the slightest interest in him, which I find extremely odd because you're telling me that there are 31 quarterbacks better than him in the NFL right now.
No way.
And there's not.
I mean, no way. But perception is reality.
And the perception is
that he's a run first quarterback who's injury prone.
Do you think that's a perception, or do you think the perception?
I think that is the created narrative that the teams are creating about Lamar Jackson to suppress his price.
Okay, because I think the reality is teams want to draw a line in the sand on quarterbacks on how much they're willing to pay them and how much they're willing to give them.
Yeah, and they're making an example off of an MVP talent player.
Right, because it's the not who's the. Who's the rookie that broke the bank, and then that's when they decided the rookies' salaries were capped? It was the quarterback. Oh my god! It was the first Native American quarterback.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sam Bradford. That's what I thought, and then I thought that didn't sound right. But yeah, and when they paid him all that money, they're like, "Okay, stop. Rookies are going to be." No, Bradford. It wasn't Stafford, was it? No, it was Sam Bradford.
Yeah. He made out a highway robbery.
Yeah. I mean, so I think this is the exact same thing is happening now. And and unfortunately, Lamar's taking the brunt of it. So
I'll give you credit though. In our first buy sell hold, you sold that. You said Lamar Jackson was not going to play this year. So what happens in that situation, right? He's still not going to get out of it. He's going to be in the same situation he's going to be in next year if he doesn't play, because they'll just roll over the tag again next year.
Right. I think if he doesn't play, the backlash is going to be so large that they won't roll it over again. I think if he doesn't play, it could go two ways. The backlash on either side, like people could say, especially if they start throwing out numbers that, you know, he left this much, he left $250 million on the floor because he wanted a guarantee. I think there'll be a backlash for people that are like, that's a shit ton of money to walk away from. But I also think that there'll be a backlash against the Ravens for not just letting him go. If he signs a tag, he can be traded for less than two first rounds.
It's one of those things, right, where, well, we definitely know that the relationship is pretty sour now with the Ravens. It's hard to go back to that. And that may be what ultimately kind of breaks the levee a little bit in actually getting a trade done, where it's just both parties just kind of, it gets to that point to where it becomes the Aaron Rodgers situation with the Packers, where it's just like, you know what, this is not good for anybody. Let's just kind of move on here. But I think that the point is being made, though, and it has nothing to do with Lamar Jackson per se. It's the point is being made that they're trying to taper back some of these quarterback salaries. And if we are going to pay a quarterback, we're going to pay the prototypical guy who we know is going to give me 12 to 15 years at the position, as opposed to someone who is a dynamic runner who, you know, career can be over on one hit. And the pushback to everybody that watches the game can say, well, that's true of every single player in the NFL. But it seems more accurate to say that about a player like Lamar Jackson.
And I think something that everyone is forgetting is that his two injuries came when he was in the pocket. They didn't come on running plays. That's true. Came when he was in the pocket. So, yeah, it's just a lot of false and not false narratives. I mean, he has gotten injured the last two seasons. But, I mean, the narrative of being skewed towards away from him. Like, he lost control of the narrative when he started representing himself. And that's another thing that, like,
they didn't like that either.
Yeah. So, yeah, I like I said, I don't think he's going to play. If Indy gets the quarterback that they want or that they think they need. And I feel, and it's really sad to feel bad for someone who put $250 million and let it slide, but I feel bad for him because I think that he's being unjustly painted as someone who is spoiled and someone who is giving up something that, you know, the normal person wouldn't. When I think for him, it's not even about, I mean, it's always about the money, but it's more about, I am worth this.
He's much. Better than Deshaun Watson. Okay. And yeah. Anybody out there that is saying that he's not, you simply aren't watching the games. He's better than Deshaun Watson. What has Deshaun Watson done? Okay. And Deshaun Watson has a contract with all of the guaranteed money. Right. Yeah. He's better. You could say Joe Burrow's better. What has Joe Burrow done but get close in the Super Bowl? You know what I mean? Like, Lamar Jackson was the best quarterback in his division, and two of the quarterbacks got paid.
Yeah, and it will soon be three. So, I mean, I don't think there's no – I think he is painted in a corner. I don't think there's any way out for him. Because he's not going to sign that. He's not going to sign the tag. There's no way. There's no way he can sign the tag now because he's made it personal. It's too personal.
It's too deep now.
Yeah. For him to sign the tag would be like capitulating, saying, you know, I was wrong. I'll sign it and see who gets it. He's not going to do that. So he has painted himself and the Ravens have painted him into a corner, and the only way out is for him not to play if a team doesn't give up what he wants. But I don't even think the Colts. I mean, as crazy as Jim Irsay is, I don't – even if they don't get the quarterback they want, I don't see them fully guaranteeing what he wants. Like, Irsay is, I think, batshit crazy or at least drunk most of the time. I don't see him doing that. I don't see him going against the grain of the other owners. Nelson Aguilar. Yeah. And that's true. Lamar's like, give me better weapons. They give him Nelson Aguilar. Come on.
Nelson Aguilar. What, you got the best tight end in the game, not named Travis Kelce.
Yeah. What else do you want? Oh, my God, Jamie. Why? Why?
Enough of that talk right there.
that's Jamie. All right. So I have nothing else on Lamar. I don't.
Yeah. You can't beat the dead horse on that one. That one, it is what it is. He better be hoping like crazy that nothing crazy happens in the draft. If those two quarterbacks are gone by the time that the Colts are on the clock, then maybe they have a chance.
Bam. It's not about the money. He'll miss $35 million. How much does he already make? How much? Like, I don't – it's not like if he doesn't play, he's going to be, like, homeless. You know what I mean? I think he has done pretty well for himself so far. So I honestly do not think he will sign the tag. I think he thinks in his head he can miss on $35 million because he's worth so much more than that. But we'll see.
We'll see.
All right. Let's do
buy, sell, hold. Oh, I got a good one.
All right, go. You go first then.
Buy, sell, hold. Iowa. Caitlin Clark is the best player in March Madness, male or female. Buy, sell, hold.
Caitlin Clark, best player in March Madness, male or female. You know, it's hard to go against a triple-double. I think that's a good call. She, like, they had her in the first half, and then second half she just kind of went, this is what I can do. However, is she good enough to beat South Carolina?
We shall find out.
What you think she is?
The way that South Carolina has played the last two games, they look a little bit vulnerable. It could be fatigue. It could be a little bit of just kind of cruise control, just kind of waiting until you play a team like Iowa where they're going to kind of respond. I feel like they were kind of looking at, okay, where's Stanford at? Where's Iowa? Where's LSU? Because those are the only teams that really have a chance to beat South Carolina. But they could have – I mean, they could have lost that last game. But I do think – I'm going to buy it, first off, before I get too deep into that. I'm going to buy that Caitlin Clark is the best player, male or female, in March Madness. She's averaging 30 points a game and 11 assists in a tournament. She just became the first player in NCAA Division I basketball history, men or women, with 900 points and 300 assists in a single season. So the lady is just flat out balling. And I wasn't high. I remember when we talked about the women's bracket before it started, I wasn't that high on Caitlin Clark. I thought that she was, you know, kind of beating up on the Big Ten. And you know how I feel about the Big Ten with Purdue and even on the guy's side there. But just kind of watching her game and just watching how much she does for Iowa and how – she is the best player on the floor, and I'm going to even say the best player on the floor, even when she plays South Carolina over Aaliyah Boston, over LSU with Angel Reese. I think that Caitlin is on a whole nother level right now. When you talk about who would be her competition, it's not going to be anybody in a women's bracket. So you're looking at the guys. Where's Drew Timmy? You know, he's at home. Okay. Where's Jalen Wilson? He's at home. Where's Zach Edey? He was home in the first round. You know what I mean? So I just think that she's playing just lights out basketball. She accounted for 72% of her team's, you know, points last. I mean, it's just amazing.
Okay. So first of all, let me ask this. Drew Timmy, how is he not a senior? Hasn't he been playing for, like, I don't know, 6 years? Why does it seem like he's been? No, he could come, or maybe he's a. They were saying he could come back next year, but he apparently isn't. But he had the opportunity was he could come back next year.
That guy's been playing forever. He's got to be.
He's been playing for like 10 years. He has been playing forever. But they were saying that he had another year of eligibility. I don't know if it's the COVID thing or what. Anyway.
Oh.
Caitlin Clark.
It could be.
I don't know because who did they play?
They played Louisville the last game.
Louisville had him in the. They had her in the first half. Like they, although she did have like an absurd number of assists, but they stymied her in the first half. She came alive in the second half on her shooting.
Timmy is a senior, by the way.
So why could he come back the COVID year?
Maybe because of the COVID year, they give him another year because it was a shortened season. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I think South Carolina, like, their defense in this last game wasn't that great. Like, Maryland was in the first half anyway. Maryland pretty much went through their defense. But the bigs that South Carolina has, and that's what was stymieing Caitlin Clark in that Louisville game when they put the 2 6-foot-2 girls on her.
Mm-hmm.
And Carolina has that. So I agree with Bam. No one's beating Carolina. They're a juggernaut. We better not have jinxed them, Bam. I will feel really bad about it. And I will tell Don Staley.
So what is the makeup of a team that could potentially beat South Carolina, right? One is going to be outstanding guard play. Somebody who's going to always have the hands in her ball, always have her ball in her hands, and, you know, just really have an impact on the game. She can shoot. She can get to the cup. She's a true floor general. She doesn't turn the ball over. She's smart. She's competitive. She's savvy. I just think that she presents a situation for South Carolina that if the game is close, right? And that's the thing, right? If you can keep South Carolina in a close game, that's when you can start to expose some of their flaws. They're not a great shooting team,
right?
Right, and so you get Iowa in a situation where, you know, you got Caitlin Clark in a 2-point game. The odds are going to shift heavily in favor of the best player on the floor, which I think is Caitlin Clark, in my opinion. Some people still think it's Aaliyah Boston. I think it's Caitlin.
I think Clark has the more complete game, at least on the offensive side, than Aaliyah Boston does. But like I said, the two bigs, the bigs that they can keep throwing at her, I think is going to hurt her. But yes.
And Don Staley will be Don Staley. Shout out to Don Staley, by the way, calling the timeout when the player for UCLA got hurt. Yeah.
Yeah. Don Staley's, I mean, she's just it. Don Staley's it. She is. Like, she's competitive, but she's also a person. You know what I mean? She's not that robotic coach that I think what's-his-face is. So, yeah, shout out to Don Staley. All right, my buy, sell, hold. Brock Purdy will – they've already said – Jim, whatever his name is. He's already said that Purdy has won the right to be the starting quarterback. Purdy will be the – yeah, he did – the GM. Purdy will be the quarterback for San Francisco for the season next year.
Lamar Jackson. No. I think it's going to be Trey Lance. I think that they made their bed with Trey Lance last year. They didn't get a chance to sleep in that bed last year. There's a lot of pride in, you know, picking that guy. There's a lot of pride in that's our guy. We went up. We moved up. You know, we made a signature move to go and get him. I think that is Trey Lance's job to lose. I'm not even sure if Brock Purdy is going to be ready by the time that the season comes around. I do think that Trey Lance will. Trey Lance's injury happened earlier in the season. So he's in a better position to come into camp healthy, which is going to give him a competitive advantage just enough to where he's going to be named a week one starter.
So
I'm selling that.
You're selling that with Jamie?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. I'm going to hold on that.
Ooh.
Yes, because I think that they want to say that Purdy is going to be the starter because he had such a good finish. But I agree with you. I don't think he is going to be ready to be the starter physically, and that's going to give Trey Lance the opportunity to take the starting job away from him. But that is all dependent on if Purdy is ready to play at the beginning of the season. Because if he's ready to play, I think they will start him over Trey Lance.
Yeah.
I mean, he took him to the playoffs. They can't not start him, I don't think, because he
did nothing to lose the job, right? Exactly. And it's like kind of like the old, you know, the baseball thing, the whole Wally Pipp, the Tom Brady, what Tom Brady did to Drew Bledsoe and, you know, all of those types of things. I just don't see it. But how, just to entertain in our fantasy minds for a second, if Lamar Jackson were to somehow end up in San Francisco some way, that would be just scary. And I might go and cry in my room as a Rams fan. but
I just want him out of the AFC North. Like, I don't really care where he goes.
You just get out of here. Huh?
Yeah, just get out of the AFC North.
Unless you come to the Steelers and then stay. Go ahead. Oh. Pop up your feet a little bit.
Yeah.
He's not the prototypical Steeler quarterback, right?
Yeah. I don't know if they know what to do with him, and I think that would hurt his value and the Steelers' value. So, yeah, just get out of the AFC North. That's all I want. We can take Cleveland. We can take Cleveland. Sorry, Jamie. Cleveland, Sean Watson, I'm not worried about. Burrow and his weapons, I'm not really that worried about. But
I said, I disagree with that. I think that that's a common point that people have made about the 49ers, and I've made that mistake of calling the 49ers quarterback proof. If that were the case, they would not have been a fish out of water in an NFC championship game. Yeah, granted, fourth string player, but I do think that Purdy made plays for the 49ers last year that he was not – that his talent allowed him to make. There were situations where, you know, he's extended plays, you know, and got downfield a little bit for them. So I don't think that they can just sign a Joe Webb off of the street and make it to the NFC title game. I do think that Purdy was definitely a miss by all of the NFL male people that listen to Mel Kiper. So I don't think that there are a plug and play type team.
Yeah, they did. But a lot of the Steelers signing, like the Steelers signing, who did they sign as the assistant head coach last year? The guy from Miami, who's now DC somewhere else. I am so bad with names. a lot of their signings are like not charity signings, but you know what I mean. They sign people that they think need that signing. You know, after they have their roster fill or whatever. They are not opposed to giving a helping hand up. Flores, thank you. Brian Flores, yes. Why? Names really don't mean
that. Oh, Brian Flores, wasn't he the linebackers coach for the Dolphins or the coordinator? I can't remember.
He was the head coach and they fired him.
He was the head coach and they fired him.
And then the Steelers bought him on as defensive assistant coordinator, assistant head coach.
Wait, so he was the interim head coach, right? Wasn't he the interim?
No, and they won? He had the job. He had the job.
Yeah. Then they win like six or seven games in a row, and then they oh wow.
And his thing was they said they wanted him to not win.
They wanted him to tank. Yeah.
And he didn't tank. And then they fired him.
I do remember that now.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think the Steelers do that. All right. What's your next one?
Buy, sell, hold. Aaron Rodgers will be traded to the New York Jets by the end of first draft weekend. By the end of the first night of draft day.
Yeah. I think the Jets have figured it out. Packers don't want him. And Miami was tampering. That's why they lost. Technically, that's why Miami doesn't have a pick in the first round of the draft, tampering with Brady.
Yeah, tampering, yeah.
But I will buy that. I think that as much as the Packers don't want him and as much as the Packers don't want to give in to him, they'll realize that they, you know, it is better to get something than nothing. So, yeah, I think.
We're going to disagree there. I'm going to – so since you're buying it, you're going to buy it from me because – I'm selling it. I think that the Jets realize that the Packers do not have any leverage. They want first round draft capital. I think that the Jets realize that they don't have to do that to get Aaron Rodgers. It's just a matter of them waiting it out. The situation is bad for the Packers. It's not bad for Aaron Rodgers. It's not bad for the Jets. It's bad for the Packers. They have gotten to the point of no return with Aaron Rodgers. They're ready to move on. They're finally fed up with all of his antics like all of the rest of the people who don't live in Green Bay are. They want to commit to Jordan Love. They want to come into everything just kind of with a fresh start. And I do think that the Packers are going to be the ones that blink first, and they're going to come off of their exchange rate of having to have a first-round pick. If they do get a first-round pick, it ain't going to be the number 13 in this year. It might be, you know, next year. But they're not picking number 13 this year, so I don't think that the Packers are going to end up making that. The Jets aren't going to end up making that trade.
What did you say? The Packers don't, that he will actually retire. You think? Wait, understand. So Bam is saying that if the Packers don't cave, that Aaron Rodgers will just not play.
And then he's not giving up $41 million.
No. See, as much, and I guess this is like a character thing. As much as I think Lamar would sit, I don't think Aaron Rodgers is going to sit. There's no freaking way.
There are two, that's the apples and oranges comparison. Lamar Jackson is still not even in the prime of his career. He's worth every penny that some team is going to pay him. Aaron Rodgers, when you're getting Aaron Rodgers, you're getting 1 year, and then you got to go through the whole prima donna stuff of will I come back next year or not? I'm going to go sit in darkness for, you know, 6 weeks and 2 days, and I'm just going to hold everybody hostage because I'm the smartest guy in the room all the time. And I think that that just kind of rubs people the wrong way after a while.
Well, I think that therein lies the point. Why would you mortgage everything you have for a player who at best 2 years max, like 2 years max, I say is Rodgers' ceiling. Like I don't end his floor.
I believe the Jets were making a mistake getting into this trade talk to begin with from the very beginning.
Oh no, I don't think he's going to play for the Packers again. There's no way. I mean, the Packers have already said, you know, we're Jordan Love. Jordan Love is our guy. I think that that's why I think that they're going to have to cave. I think that they
The Packers are going to be the one to have to cave because they know that they're going to lose. They're trying to get something for Aaron Rodgers. The relationship is over. They cannot go back into camp with Aaron Rodgers still being their quarterback. But they don't have the leverage to demand the capital that they want for Aaron Rodgers because the Jets can simply be like, we good. We're going to wait another year on it and see what happens.
And, you know, Lamar's here. Lamar's got it. I don't think he'll play for the Packers, but I can't see him retiring. I can't see Rodgers going, okay, I'm not going to play at all. As much as I can see Lamar saying that for 1 year, I'm not going to play at all. I can't see Rodgers doing that. He would, plus, you know, that if it doesn't happen, Rodgers is going to make the biggest fuss about the Packers that he possibly can, and he's going to make the organization look as bad as he could possibly look it. And they'll just simply go, we're done, and just give Jets.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers is the guy who wants to break up, okay, but he doesn't want to do it himself. He wants to make the girl look bad
and exactly.
does all of this stuff. And that's kind of what Aaron Rodgers is.
Yeah, it is. Aaron Rodgers
if I were the Jets, I would have stayed far away.
Yeah,
but
I don't get it. I don't get the whole we have to have them in order to win. I mean, I think they could have won with Mike White this year, but you know, I don't see it. Anyway, we have gone a little bit over, and I appreciate Bam, you and your conversations. I appreciate Jamie, you and your crazy conversations, because Jamie's that guy that like stays on the path and then goes, what the fuck? I'm just gonna throw this in there.
Yeah, Jamie gives us a plan B. He gives us a plan B content every time, every show.
Exactly. And that's just who he is. And that's why we love him. So thanks everyone for listening and watching. If you are watching later and you're watching on YouTube, you should probably just hit that like button so our, like, what is it? The algorithm is like, you know, whatever it should be. And next week will be Kyle. And I forgot who's having on, but it's always a good show. And it's always an hour earlier than ours. So you come and listen to Kyle this Thursday. This Thursday, in no particular order, will be mock drafting 70s and 80s band with Kyle and the TFS doc and Ralphie. And I'm excited. This is what I'm most excited about. Ralphie D, the guy who picked the topic, is a musician. So we will have opening music because we're going to use a little bit, a snippet of Ralphie's music to open the show with. So come and listen.
That is fire.
7 o'clock. I know. And he's really good. Like, he's really good. He's a Giants fan, and I forgive him for that, but he's really good. So thank everyone who's watching, Bam and Jamie, for your comments. Thank you, Jay. Thank your wife for letting you watch. I appreciate her so much. And I thank your kids because I think they make my night. They really, really do.
You hear how out of control they were?
I love it.
That was the wifey saying, "You figure it out, bro." So
I love it. It's like if everything was in control, then why be around? It's the kids.
We like the chaos. Florida Atlantic in the finals. Chaos.
And all you need now is to get a dog, and my life would be complete. On Monday nights. Anyway, thank you all. We will see you in 2 Mondays. And also, like, look us up on the draft show. We'll be doing that. We will be the last participants because we're on the West Coast, and that's early for us, although it's late for you guys. But anyway, thank you guys, and we will see you soon. Peace. Bye, Jamie. Bye, Bam. Peace.